Dear Lord, Great Spirit, may we feel truth and honor wisdom. May we cultivate love as the armor gives way. May we be fully at peace as we find presence. May we be free from harm as we find full expression. May we be healthy and our vessels be clear. May we be strong as our light shines through. May our endurance withstand all pressures. May the will power all action as we align with our higher selves. May we be at ease and happy as we rest in the equal insignificance and importance of all.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
and so it is.
Welcome to Forge Your Health Podcast. This is a show about personal empowerment. I am Justin Ribner.
And I'm Emily Jones.
Tune in weekly as guests join us from all walks of life
to seek richness in the daily experience,
to help define individual values,
to cast aside imposed identity,
and to seek a dynamic range of emotional content
by following our highest excitements,
and by investing in all things naturally whole and good on this earth.
If there's anything mentioned in today's show that's worthy of show notes, then you can head over to forgeyourhealth.com and click on podcast on the main menu to get at those. If there's any information that you want to track down that's not necessarily something that would be put in the show notes, then you can feel free to drop us a DM on Instagram or contact us through our website. As always, please, please, please share this show with anyone in your network that you think can use it or that you think would benefit from the content that we are bringing you. And if you have not done so already, then head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure that you are subscribed. Also, give us a shout if you know someone you would want us to have on the show. Now, if you really value the show and you feel as though we're contributing to your life in a meaningful way, then there are a couple of ways you can show us you appreciate all of our hard work. First is by leaving a review. This means the absolute world to us, and it is the primary way that these platforms that we're coming to you through work and how we reach more people is by you showing us and them that the podcast has been worth your time by writing us a short review. And now, every month, if you are interested at all in free coaching, and yes, that means totally free coaching, all you have to do is leave us that review on iTunes and send us a screenshot of it to justin@foragerhealth.com, and you can be picked as our review of the month. Your review will be read on the show as a special thank you, and you'll be given the opportunity to join me for 14 days of free coaching. Now, that is actually a really huge offer. Depending on the person and the type and the amount of work that they need, that can sometimes be the equivalent of a full 10-hour coaching package for a new client with me. This is a fantastic opportunity if you are interested in receiving personal guidance with your health, but you're not quite sure where to turn to or what health coaching is or what lifestyle-based healthcare looks like. And so this is a fantastic way to kind of test out the waters, and real lasting growth can be available to you just through this 2-week transformational experience. You're going to go through my full intake, full lifestyle evaluation, full health history, full fitness assessment, and we are going to break down what is going on in your life that could be addressed as your low-hanging fruits in order to express your truth and embody the full vitality available to you in any given moment on any given day. Thank you for listening, and here is today's show. Hello, people. It is a wonderful early fall Wednesday morning here in O'Fallon, Missouri, where we currently reside. Emily and I are sitting down today to talk about philosophy part one of our final stages of healing series. In a way, we're continuing from last week's sort of theme where, although we did give action steps, it was a little bit more of an esoteric discussion, as philosophy tends to be. Last week, we talked about letting go, and we put a major emphasis on learning to heal your relationship with yourself and with your own mind. And in healing the relationship with the self, we can then go and apply that growth to manage our relationships with others. And we discussed that if you are trying to overcome an illness or an interference in your life or going through a growth or an evolutionary experience, you will never really give your body the space that it needs to fully heal and evolve energetically into a better life situation without having first gone and healed your relationship within your own mind and gotten out of that negative or self-defeating state of thought. And therefore, it's harder to attract positivity and opportunity for progression beyond the current stage of life that you're in. And that is why, and I've experienced this myself, I'm sure that Emily here has as well, we tend to end up with major periods in our lives where there are these common recurrent cyclical themes that are ever present in earlier stages of personal evolution before we break out of the record player of the same lessons brought up in different ways over and over again through different points in our timeline. Does that resonate with you? That we go through cycles before we learn to kind of like finally build the relationship with the self in order to recognize and then break through, like we learn the lesson from the cycle and so it goes away?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I can even, a couple of close friends that I know would say the exact same thing too.
Oh, yeah. Like,
that's a pretty universal thing that happens.
Yeah, so today we're going through several lifestyle principles that we have identified as common themes both in our own lives and with the people we help and with people we interact with socially and within our families for sure, even though we don't, you know, we don't tend to evaluate them too much because that's not fair to the people closest to us. But yeah, by bringing philosophy to the forefront, it really means not so much only universal philosophy of healing. So while these might be applicable to broad spans of people, they are also kind of cues for you to, like, if you disagree or if you agree with any of them to any varying extent, for you to explore within your own mind what your personal philosophy is at home, because this is not going to be a exclusive or all-inclusive list between today and the part two of our philosophy, because we're doing a two-parter here. This is more of what we have identified as some of the biggest hurdles we have overcome and that we've seen at people that we love and people that we are close to and people that we've helped need to overcome in order to get to that kind of like sunny southward facing slope of their own personal mountain where it is all sort of quote unquote easy rolling, or you have confidence in the direction you're going and you kind of know that you are that you have a strong belief in your purpose and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. That's what this late stage of healing really is, mm-hmm. is where you begin to really have confidence in the fact that you can see that you are finally heading in the right direction after being, you know, the ball in the pinball machine for the many years that it takes in order to get here. And so principle number one of today's episode is putting yourself first.
Yes. So a very common core wound that a lot of people deal with is that they are a people pleaser. This can be you know, passed down from generations. It can be the result of listening to society telling you that you need to do X, Y, and Z for other people. There's just a lot of inputs that really drive people to not take care of themselves and to focus on helping other people. And I've found that it took a lot to beat this out of me. Definitely used to be a people pleaser myself, but after a long time, it really, after a lot of cyclical lessons, I've learned that in order to really take care of others, you really have to take care of yourself. We touched a little bit on it last week with having a filled cup, and you can't pour into other people's cups unless your cup is full. And it can be kind of hard to understand until you've experienced it.
Or until you've identified that you're doing it.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
So it's, you know, symptoms of someone who takes care of others more than themselves would be someone who is always saying yes. They cancel, you know, their own plans. They don't take time out to do the things that they love, you know, whether that's reading or taking a bath or walking or hanging out with friends. They're always doing other things to make other people happy. And then slowly their own happiness disappears. And other symptoms of that include, you know, being short-tempered or, you know, just getting agitated easily or having like scatterbrained where you're just like, oh, I have to do this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And none of it has to do with something that you actually want to do.
Yeah. And you're worrying about what you need to do for other people instead of, like, you might have depression or anxiety, but you're anxious about what needs to be done for other rather than what needs to be done for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really an important thing to identify that this is a core wound of the sacred feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is being in the feminine, like, yin giving energy, where, like, Susan Rossi talks about your box and left and right, and one is giving and one is taking, and you could do either too much, and so those sides are blown out. This is, like, a guy or a girl could have this. So this is energetics. This isn't necessarily male or female, like, as far as what sex you identify with, because we each have both of those energies within us. But it is much more common for women to have this problem because they are fighting 5 to 10,000 years of subjugative, patriarchal, dominated, like, cultural energy. And so when you grow up and you see your mom working her ass off for everybody else and never taking anything for herself, and it's like, that's seen as good. That's seen as like a saintly woman in like your neighborhood or your family is giving, and not taking the time to have her needs met. That's seen as like historically or traditionally in today's cultureless society as a good role model woman instead of somebody who is also embodying, and that's not the sacred, that's part of sacred feminine, but only if it's balanced by the nurturing masculine aspect of like, I'm taking this for myself. Mm-hmm. And so this, the mirror side of this core wound is also that if you're a guy and all you do is take, then you are feeding into that part of the ego or shadow self of thinking that everything is like supplying you and that you're the center of your own universe rather than giving back as well. And either one of those can contribute to dis-ease in your body.
Right.
So, yeah, understanding that.
It's also important to identify that if you've ever received or had someone who is a people pleaser do something for you, and then you've had someone who actually, you know, takes care of themselves, they have a full cup and they're doing something for you, the level of presence and the level of energetic exchange is completely different. So you might be, you know, doing all these things for people, but it's not the same as if you were actually present and had a full cup and were able to actually give to them. So that's just another important thing to note.
Yeah, it can literally be, if it's just from autopilot, yes, then it's the same thing as being depressed and doing nothing on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you can be doing something, but for the wrong reasons, mm-hmm, like just because you're expected to, instead of like really doing it as an act of loving devotion, which is in a mode of goodness.
Yes.
You know, you can be in a mode of ignorance and still be doing good things as viewed by the extrinsic observer.
Mm-hmm. And that energy is registered by the receiver.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's really wild to think about. And so how to get out of this? I mean, understanding that you're truly worth your time and space that you take up in other people's lives. Like, this is something that just comes from personal growth. It comes from everything that we've ever talked about on the show. But it really needs to be understood that your presence is a gift in of itself, and not taking what you need or asking for what you need is an imbalance in your life energetically that is rooted in trauma, mm, or is rooted in sociological conditioning, which, mm-hmm, often in today's world is traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, putting yourself first is huge. If you don't put yourself first enough, or you don't give enough, which is once again the flip side of that, if you don't have that in balance, then you might not be in that late stage of healing just yet, and that might be one of the things that you need to look at and think about and sit with in order to grow into your next stage of, you know, energetic capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So principle number two.
Yep.
All right. Do not compromise your ideals, even for the people trying to help you. Mm. A predecessor to this, because it's possible to steer yourself in the wrong direction here, is that you need to know who you are.
Mm.
So that is an early, that's like the first stage. That is in my foundational seven, that is the scaffold work for living a full life that I detail in the very first episodes of this podcast. We touch on love as the very first thing, and in order to love yourself, you have to know yourself. And I elaborate in great detail, maybe a little bit philosophically as well, but like what that means, you know, like who you are and who you are not. And it's nothing short of ego dissolution. That's a tremendous multi-year major life journey in of itself, but we're talking about the philosophy behind something like that. And so my point in bringing that up is that if you are in like this stage of not knowing whether or not you know who you are, then you can still put your ideals and your concepts of how you're going to get better before whatever people are trying to push on you. But if you really don't know yourself yet, even if you're not aware of it, you might end up steering yourself in the wrong direction and then have more lessons waiting for you when that wrong direction goes wrong. That doesn't mean what you did is bad. That just means that, like, you could go off the path here. You could walk down the wrong, mm-hmm, road multiple times in trying to do this. And every time you go wrong or something doesn't work out, people might say, like we told you to do this and not that. It's like, no, like, I needed this learning experience in order to have the experience itself. And that's as valuable as making progress,
mm-hmm,
because you're finding out something doesn't work. You would not know if you didn't try it. And if it feels right in your heart and in your mind's eye energetically to you, then that means that even if it goes quote unquote wrong, the lesson you learned from it was supposed to happen. And so if you really need help learning who you are, or you're still in that earlier stage, you can go listen to episode 3 of this podcast, or if you're at a totally uncertain time of your life, you can hire a coach like me to help you and identify your values and clarify who you are when you are in integrity and in soul alignment. And that could mean you're still in that earlier stage, and that's okay. But if you do know who you are and you stop bending to the wills of everyone around you, and this isn't necessarily feeding into people pleasing, this is about, like, everybody knows what's best for you more than you do kind of thing, which happens to you when you're either trying to grow or trying to get healthy.
Yes. And it's always rooted in their own personal experiences that they went through.
And insecurities as well. But we're going to get to that. Vast opportunity for change and learning and growth has opened up when you put your concepts of what you need to do and what experiences you need to have first. Everybody's going to have an opinion. And like, as you follow your own above everybody else's, people may shift to thinking that you're totally nuts or that you need help, that you need more help because you've stopped listening to them and you need to hold your ground. And that brings us to principle three,
which is being your own boss, as well as your own lover and your own best friend, basically being your own everything.
Yeah.
That does, you know, build on kind of the last two principles we just talked about. And I wanted to open this third principle with a quote from Bruce Lee that says, "We must devote ourselves to being self-sufficient and must not depend upon the external rating of others for our happiness."
I like that.
Yeah. So in general, being your own boss is to help identify when you're having a good day versus, I don't want to say not a good day, not a bad day, but you have your on and off days, right? Because we do need the balance of doing and resting. And so the concept behind being your own boss is to do the work when you have the energy, when you're having that on day, but then when you're having more of an off day, to rest. And you have to go all in on both of these days. If you're, you know, feeling good and you're ready to do the work, you need to do the work. But then if you're having a day where your body is saying rest, you need to rest and rest hard. If you're trying to work through the time that you need to rest, you're not going to get the recovery you need and you're not going to do good work.
Yeah. It's about where your mind is at also, right? Like if you are resting but thinking about the work you need to do, then you're half-assing it.
Yes.
And so this is really about discipline and like mental control. And I hate the term mental control because it doesn't really exist. Basically, you need to be at ease. Like you need to have put in the work in order to be able to switch your mind from go, go, go to rest and digest, which could be meditation, which I mention like every episode. But it's true.
It's also important to note that there is no free time, right? We're either working or we're resting or we're tuning out. Mm-hmm. And so tuning out can be in a variety of ways. We can tune out by scrolling social media. We can tune out by watching TV. We can tune out by using substances, whether that's medications or alcohol. You know, there's long list of things that are basically just trying to numb where we're at and what we're doing.
And what we feel.
Yes. And so when we do that, when we tune out, we're creating stagnancy. And stagnancy leads to deterioration. When we're not focusing on anything, when we're not going all in on doing the work or recovering, then we're basically on autopilot and we lose a sense of purpose. We lose a sense of time. Things pass by without us having interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you basically just feel like crap.
Yeah, it's about holding yourself in that low energy state by medicating instead of leaning into acknowledging that you have to rest and that you have to be all in on it. And when I put the word medicating into these talking points, it was really a self-reflection, not just about pharmaceuticals or alcohol or anything like that. There was a large period of time in my own healing experience with chronic Lyme and with mold poisoning where it was, you wake up every single day knowing that you have to work on your energetics, that you have to do breath work, that you have to do qigong, that you have to meditate, that you have to like sit yourself in journal and that you have to nap. But it's so much easier when you're already in a low energy state or in a broken mind state like most people are nowadays where social media has wrecked our cognitive performance because every 5 seconds we're clicking on the apps and cycling through, you know. A lot of people have that problem. I help people with that problem, by the way, not to make this entire freaking thing a commercial. But I have so much experience knowing for very long periods of time that I have to do certain things, which is rest in some way, like give my brain space to heal. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's so much easier to tune out by like medicating for you or for me could have been scrolling social media. It could be watching TV even instead of taking care. Like it could be literally anything that takes you away from what you're feeling in present time consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's a distraction. Ambrose Cole, who we had on the podcast like a couple months ago, talked about a distraction cycle. And it was a really fantastic part of the conversation. And a lot of people are stuck in that distraction cycle nowadays in order to not feel how they're feeling or how they're doing in that moment. And that's really what I meant by tuning out or medicating and stagnancy, being that if you are repeating the same thing that is keeping you in this low energy state where you're tuned out, then your body, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. That's true. It really is.
That even applies to... That's also relevant to people who aren't necessarily going through a, you know, physical healing journey, but people who are just unhappy with, you know, where they're at in their mm-hmm. career or in their life. You know, I spent 7 years in just a desk career marketing job, and I saw a lot of coworkers and friends who weren't happy with their life. They weren't happy with the job that they were in, but they didn't. They were stuck in that distraction cycle because they would go to work, they would do the work, they would complain about the work, and then they would go home and sit in front of the TV all night, or they would go out drinking with their friends, and they weren't putting in the work. They weren't following the healing philosophy to create something new, to get to somewhere better.
And it's so easy to get stuck in reaching for anything you're used to. It could be snacks. It could be ice cream after dinner, you know, in order to not be here now.
Yep.
It's about – you can go watch The Social Dilemma and understand how addiction works in the brain and how they foster addiction through the way that they design their apps. Mm-hmm. It's about where you're getting your dopamine from. So it is a neurological response that we are addicted to leaning on because we don't have – life practice that brings us to a high, like a dopamine serotonin balance, a neurotransmitter balance on its own, right. Which is really like that is the chemical property of depression or anxiety, whether it's chemical or situational depression or even adrenal fatigue, it's all neurotransmitter related. It's not just like I'm not talking isolation here, so there's other things going on, but. But yeah, it is important to note that there are ways to feel that good without doing the thing that is culturally accepted as how we get our momentary quote unquote happiness or sense of okayness from. Mm-hmm. And that is what living a disciplined lifestyle is like. Meditation brings that same thing. Breath work, gratitude brings the same thing. Journaling, calling a loved one, and it lasts longer.
Right.
You know?
There is that initial hump. You know, if you've ever gone from like couch potato to working out, your body is so used to doing what it's doing. So it does take that initial effort to get over that hump and really start putting in the work. But once you start doing these healthy lifestyle things. Once you start meditating for a few days in a row or exercising a few days in a row, breath work, you know, a week or two at a time, like you'll get over that hump and you'll realize that you do feel better.
Yeah.
And you're almost proud of yourself for doing something good for yourself. And then that just begins to snowball and you just start feeling better about everything.
Yeah. You know, it'd be as simple as going for a walk if you're one of the people listening to this. Despite me not shutting up about meditation, but you're super averse to meditation, then put on shoes and get outside for sure. I just came up with that that where you get your dopamine from thing, mm-hmm. that just popped into my head in the moment. If somebody gives us enough capital in order to order t-shirts that say that on them, where you get your dopamine from, question mark, then I'll totally start selling t-shirts on the website.
I like that.
It's a great idea. I'm starting one-time donations anyway. I'm doing the buy me a cup of coffee thing. That's going to be one of our new advertisements for the show so that people don't have to sign up for Patreon in order to support the show. So, yeah, one-time donations, build up capital. We're going to start selling where do you get your dopamine from, question mark.
I like it.
Forge your health. Okay.
Moving on. Next principle.
Wait.
Oh.
I just want to say that, like, let's sum it all up because we're all crazy right now. When you feel great, produce. When you don't feel great, actually recover. Mm-hmm. So rest and recovery are two different things. You can be resting and scrolling social media. You cannot recover and scroll social media, especially. Right. Yeah, it's like not – doesn't work, you know. I had call a family member in there. Look at that. Anyway, do you want to talk about being your own lover and being your own best friend, like just briefly before moving on to primary care?
Sure. Those things kind of loop back into, you know, not relying on outside forces to reach the state of happiness, to reach that full state of recovery. You have to do that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so leading into something we're going to talk about in a little bit is you might have to be careful about the new outside relationships that you do bring into your life,
mm-hmm.
and how you manage those. Because it's important to make sure that you only give energy to the people that are in alignment with the new you, the person that you're trying to become, and not people that have the expectations or feed into the old you.
Yeah. That's hard to do too, because like your earlier part, it's hard to do if you're dealing with a disease or disorder,
mm-hmm.
instead of just a personal growth journey, because the earlier parts of your healing journey have to be sharing with people that you are not okay,
mm-hmm.
and that you're not feeling well and that you need help and that you know, you're going on your multi-doctor journey, which unfortunately we all have a multi-doctor journey. You know, it's like everybody in your life that's close to you knows before this can happen that you're sick. And then you need to then, even though they are not, like, not everybody in your life is going to evolve as you evolve in order to get healthy, you need to then only feed into the people who are, like, expecting you to get healthier again. It's like you're labeled as sick,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is it's a troubling, tricky situation to then align with the people who expect the new you, which is the healed you,
mm-hmm.
instead of like the label of having that dis-ease in your body.
And so in regards to relationships and boundaries during these periods of transformation, it is important to basically purge all those who, you know, think lesser of you, which kind of sounds harsh. It can be a tricky thing to navigate depending on who those people might be, as far as close relations. And it can also be an interesting transformation as you, in your earlier parts of healing, you may have made a bunch of connections with people who have the same disease or condition as you did or as you do. And if those people aren't growing at the same rate or if they're not healing at the same rate, they may be holding you back. They might not be purposefully trying to hold you back, but in your heart, you might have that feeling. And so it's important to put distance between people who give you that feeling, that they're putting those expectations that you are still sick.
Or that you're still the same person.
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that the people that you are interacting with most often see you as your best self.
And that's hard.
It is very hard.
Well, I started a couple, like a month ago now, studying depth psychology under Bill Plotkin. And before that, I was reading The Red Book by Carl Jung. And it's like really crazy to think about how a lot of these world-renowned, like, you know, best psycho-spiritual thinkers of recent history talk about how removing yourself from your community is essential in order to go on this growth experience. And that can be a really isolative experience in of itself. And so a lot of the people listening to this right now that are interested in later stages of healing are probably already in the stage where they feel isolated, even if they haven't physically removed themselves from the situations where people are imposing expectations on you of being someone who you haven't been in a long time. And so this is one of the most challenging things to deal with in a healing journey. It really is. And what you really need to do is, it's hard, but you have to accept the fact that you're never going to have the same nature of relationship with these people, even if they are literally your immediate family, that you did before all of this happened. And on the other end of it, you're going to have a beautiful relationship still, but it needs to transform. And in order for that period of transformation to take place, you might have to step back for a while. And you might have to look within for that community. And that is part of being your own lover and your own best friend also, like we touched on briefly. But it goes beyond that. Like, you need to look for the type of support that you need. If that support costs money, then shell out the money. If you can find it for free, then great. But you have to be proactive about it, even if you aren't feeling well. You know, at one point, I was texting and sending voice messages every day to like one other person that I've never even met in person before, but we have, or we had the same illness or a similar illness, because it's different in every single person, the type of stuff that I was going through. And that alone was like, oh, one person actually gets me, and we can talk positively about it instead of negatively about it. It's hard to even find a doctor, which we're going to talk about soon, that will talk positively with you about the condition.
Right.
So, let alone like a therapist or whatever. Lord forbid.
Right. And unfortunately, sometimes our immediate family members or close friends or people that we are basically forced to interact with every day, they don't fit this type of relationship that we're describing. And so, in order to navigate those relationships, we need to establish boundaries.
Yeah.
Which leads us into the next principle, boundaries.
Yeah. And this is boundaries as a principle, not energetic boundaries as a practice, which you can hear about in our conversation with Jordan Neer and on several other mentions over the course of the show. And these boundaries, as they pertain to your personal philosophy of healing, have to do with setting your own expectations as far as what you want from people in your life. And when they give you something that you don't want or need, like not letting it touch you, not letting it, you can't carry it with you. People are not going to understand different parts of your journey. They see you at the beginning and they'll see you again at the end. And anything in between that is confusing to them, because you being uncomfortable in any way, even if it's a very legitimate disease, and doing something about it brings up a lot of personal insecurities with them. And so they aren't going to understand if on your best days you are still yourself and they don't see you on your worst days because you're at home, like in bed or whatever, for example. And they also don't see the work that you're putting in when you're not like at a family affair or out with friends. And they don't see the amount of effort that it takes to produce the best days that you have, which is a tremendous effort if you are dealing with some sort of disease, in order to have the energy and the wherewithal and the motivational drive to go and enjoy some sort of social life every once in a while. So people are not going to be comfortable with the idea that you can be broken and still succeeding in getting healthier, or in trouble in any way, or uncomfortable with your situation and still like reclaiming parts of yourself in the right moments in order to live some semblance of normalcy, which is part of healing, is, you know, not focusing on the thing you're trying to overcome or growing, not focusing on the growth that you need to get, but like living in the moment. Living in the moment is healing. And you know, our society is conditioned to not believe that someone can recover from illness or that someone can change. Seriously.
Change is scary to a lot of people.
Change is scary, but also, I'm going to repeat this, we are not conditioned to believe someone can recover from illness. We're not conditioned to believe that people can get better once they're sick, because what happens with most sick stories, you go to the doctor and they give you medication to cope with your illness.
And you stay on that medication
medication with the rest of your life, and the number of medications grows and the number of hospital visits grows until eventually you die under 15 medications and from organ failure because of the medication that was keeping you alive with the lifestyle that caused it in the first place. My whole family's like this, and you know, if they listen to this, I'm sorry if this hurts to bring it into your awareness. Like, I love everybody in my family very, very much, so closely that it hurts to think about this sometimes. But you can, once you're diagnosed with a chronic illness, change how you're living and literally get healthy again, healthier than you've ever been. And instead, we rely on these external factors, which we're going to talk about when we talk about, you know, being your own primary care. We rely on these external factors to bolster ourselves in order to continue living instead of changing the way we live and healing. And so when you take it under your own power to elevate yourself above the illness and change, it scares the hell out of everybody around you that you are changing. Mm. People categorize us as sick or fully recovered, or they categorize us as your old self, like maybe you're stuck in a corporate structure or whatever, or you know, you quit your job and go off on your own adventure, and they categorize you as somebody crazy or dangerous or a
fraud.
Going
through a midlife crisis.
Yeah, or like you become spiritual or whatever. And so people say you're a fraud because you weren't spiritual when you were 30, and now you are like associated with an ashram when you're 40. And like you're talking to people about yoga or whatever, you're a fraud because you didn't always do it. Like I have I think one of my older brother's friends is a vegan, but he wasn't always a vegan in their college days. And so he calls him a fake vegan because he wasn't a vegan since he was born. So it's like that kind of funny thing. And that's a funny example. I mean, no offense to my older brother, who I is so near and dear to my heart at all by saying that. I think, you know, he jokes about it himself, so I feel comfortable saying it on the show. Any action or detail of your journey in between the start and finish challenges people's insecurities, and it makes them aware that they're not okay with themselves, and it makes them aware that they're not changing. So it means that everyone around you that feels this way, and I'm sure everyone listening to this can relate, is living in a way that promotes stuckness or sickness, and they are not okay, but they are in the distraction cycle of not being okay. And so you trying to be okay is very challenging to their whole worldview. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's a great little example that just popped into my head is, if you've ever gone on, I don't want to say a diet, if you've ever tried to change your nutritional habits and you're around other people who used to have the same habits as you, say everyone's gathering and they're having some cake, and you pass up the cake because it's no longer something that you want to consume, or perhaps it's you already had a piece of cake earlier in the week and you're not having a second piece of cake this week. The peer pressure from the people that are eating the cake for you to eat the cake, because now they're uncomfortable that they're eating the cake because they probably don't feel good about themselves, is basically what we're talking about in a grander scale.
That's such a fantastic example. Because it's a literal one that I'm pretty sure everybody has seen. Mm-hmm. Everybody living that has a family in holidays or that works in an office has seen the cake and the one person not eating it scenario.
Oh, it's just one piece of cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's 10 pieces of cake a month.
Yes.
Anyway, that's a whole other rabbit hole. But
anyways, I am still just heartbroken and astounded, and I can't believe I missed this going through the notes, but I just want to repeat again that we are conditioned to not believe someone can recover.
Yeah. It's mind-blowing.
As a future, you know, chiropractor, as someone who's going to be seeing people with diseases and conditions, it just, wow.
Yeah. Like, the big secret here, the big punchline, the takeaway is that most people are very uncomfortable and doing nothing about it. They are in the distraction cycle, and part of the distraction cycle is not believing they have the power to actually do anything about it.
Mm. Yeah, I know, the nutrigenics and nutrigenomics field starts to expand, a lot of people use that to blame a lot of disease and dis-ease, chronic conditions, on genetics. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true.
No, it's old hat. It's old news. Mm-hmm. You know, it just does not work.
It's easier to blame genetics than to put in the work, change your lifestyle, and actually heal.
My absolute favorite examples, I mean, I could be one of my own favorite examples, but like the people who inspired me to be in the health space in the first place, like I've listened to Ben Greenfield since like 2014 or 2013. He talks about what his genetic makeup is, and it is hilarious. He's predisposed to everything.
It's
and
like
he's
one 4% of the healthiest body fat.
He's one of the healthiest people on the planet. Same thing with Aaron Alexander and Joe DiStefano. Like the three of the healthiest people that I know in my whole worldly experience. Three of the healthiest people in the world as far as happiness and whole family living and just like the beauty of their relationships. Oh my goodness. And yeah, they're, you know, diabetics, obese, heart disease, cancer patients, prospectively speaking, meaning that they have the propensity to be, but they're not, because they live in alignment with what's best for their bodies and best for the earth. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think one of the best quotes for that topic is that genetics will load the gun, but your lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Hmm. Yeah. And everybody's genetically predisposed to something. So it's really right. Like it's all the same lifestyle, even in different conditions based on your epigenetic framework, your mm-hmm. phenotype expression. And that just means that it's the whole entire field is useless, because if you live a healthy lifestyle, you're healthy, like we've always known. And if you live a shitty lifestyle or the lifestyle of the king or queen in ancient times, then you get sick and die early. Mm-hmm. You know, there was diabetes and cancer and osteoporosis and heart disease back in ancient Egypt and back through the Middle Ages and everything like that in Europe. And it's like, okay, so who had it? It's the people buried in the big fancy tomb that had anything they wanted. Which is exactly what each and every one of us is nowadays, even in poverty.
So one of the issues that I have when people start talking about boundaries,
uh-huh.
and usually it's because it's, you know, on social media that I'll see it, and it's just a short snippet, and I understand that you can't, you know, go into great lengths depending on your platform. But what does that actually look like? Like, what are some examples or action steps to help people better understand what boundaries are and how they can start initiating them?
Well, boundaries protect us from a lot of different things, but mostly they allow us to be our authentic selves in situations where it is made difficult by not letting people cast their version of us back, like, onto ourselves, and then we reflect back on that, and it's a game of mirrors.
They're casting the old version of us onto our...
and then we react, and it's very easy for us to express our old trauma selves in old environments. So this mm-hmm. comes out the most when we're dealing with people from earlier stages in our lives.
Yes.
Like our upbringings.
If you've ever moved away for a period of time and then visited back home, and if you've gone any type of growth or change or healing in the time that you were away, going back to that old environment just feels very weird.
But people expect you
to be the same person that you were when you left.
And it's not only that, though, because all of the reactionary emotional behavior of your inner protectors, of your shades, which is like fractals of the shadow self, all of the ego protection that you express out in the world away from those old environments is conditioning from those old environments. And so the mm-hmm. same patterns exist, just kind of more spaced out and subtle.
I know, and there's a lot of talk too on this topic about the neural groove and the one that you're greasing and it's very easy to fall back into that old
groove. Yeah, but that neural groove has a trigger.
Hmm.
And it's removing the trigger that allows the groove to be repaired. You know, you got to catch yourself in the beginning. But as far as what boundaries practices are, that might be beyond the scope of this conversation. Like, I understand that it's like heartfelt for both of us and that you want to elaborate further. But the lessons are a whole conversation in and of themselves, mm-hmm. as far as really how to do it. And then the ideology behind it, which we're talking philosophy, is really rooted in knowing who you are
and not compromising
and being able to do that is hard when you are in an emotionally triggering environment where those ego protections and inner protectors come up, because like that's where they came from, that's like their home,
right?
But if you are centered in yourself, meaning you have put in the work,
you've taken care of yourself.
Your cup is full. You've meditated that day. You've gotten a good sleep. You go in with a smile. You let people's negativity bounce off of you. You basically set yourself up to be able to take it lighter and let it brush off your back. That is philosophically what happens.
I think another great little tidbit that doesn't require a ton of explanation but can help kind of round that out is not being afraid to say the word no, and to be able to say the word no without a list of reasons why.
Yeah, like I'm not talking about that, or I'm not going there. It's like, but you have to do it from a compassionate, empathetic place. Like, I'm sorry, I don't think it would be best for us to go there like right now. Like, I really want to enjoy my time with you, and that's a touchy subject, and we can just like move on and agree to disagree, and like it's a beautiful thing and something like that. But also, it's not, you have to pick your words wisely. This is about nonviolent communication, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the boundary practices that you can have in order to catch yourself in the moment is when somebody says something that's triggering to you, which will happen like every family holiday to somebody, take a deep breath before you respond and smile. And that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
Really. But yeah, practices are not the main point of today's conversation. And you can go back and listen to a lot of our other content where we've talked about literally how. And I even teach boundaries in the beginning of each of my meditation ceremonies on Patreon.
Mm.
Like the very basics. And that will foster being able to instill that in your life whenever you want it if you practice it regularly. And so, yeah. But anyway, next we need to talk about a different kind of boundaries before moving into one of our last things for today, which is it pertains directly to more so if you are unwell and that's your growth journey, your healing experience. It's time boundaries. It's about holding a container. And I have found this to be one of the critical things that spurred me into later stages of healing upon later stages of healing this past like year and a half, is that I stopped thinking about what I need to do or where I need to be or who I need to be 12 months from now. And I cut it down way short.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this in a different context, not necessarily in the context of it being a healing philosophy, but it really is a healing philosophy. When you talk about cutting down your perspective on your time projection and your outlook and where you're sending your energy to, it makes it much easier to be here now in present time consciousness and taking care of yourself now and being productive now and being happy and content now, if you're, instead of worrying about where you're going to be in 18 months or 12 months or 6 months, thinking about what you're doing the next 8 weeks or 12 weeks max. And so we've talked a lot of hedonic calendaring on the show before, which is like, you know, you talk about your annual goals and your monthly goals to get to there, your 90-day objectives or whatever, and you span out your life. And there's lots of personal development work from many different sources talking about doing that, like talking about your 1 year and 3 year goals and then the smaller chunks in between. But I'm talking about literally throwing everything else in the garbage and like, what is your next 8 to 10 weeks looking like? Mm-hmm. And keeping that boundary. And I call that holding a container, you know.
That could almost be related back to our first episode on the final stage of healing, where you're creating consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, being honest with consistency in practice.
Yes. And yeah. Starting small.
And starting small.
The way that you would do that.
Yeah. In a different context, for sure. It ties back into exactly the same principle. Really don't flip your calendar further than that and see how it feels, because it makes a tremendous difference. Mm-hmm. If the only thing in your life is only 2 months away.
Mm-hmm.
And it week to week, it's very, very beneficial. So, yeah. What's our next principle, Emily?
Our next principle is that you are your own primary care physician. Now, that doesn't mean we all need to go sign up for a doctorate program and actually become a PCP.
I like that.
However, it does mean that you need to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
For understanding your condition, understanding the treatments that you're undergoing, understanding all of your options.
Yeah.
And basically managing that.
So, yeah, it is managing yourself rather than letting somebody else manage it for you. And we both have a fair bit of personal experience with even holistically minded doctors kind of skirting around what you know in your heart center is best for you in any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then them literally claiming that they want you to invest in them and their work and their plan for you as the main thing to focus on to get better. And then the plan given is all kind of what you would consider of tertiary importance.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it gets suboptimal results over even long periods of time. And this means that if all your doctors have done is given treatments to symptoms and you haven't addressed how you're living, going back,
mm-hmm.
then they're not actually helping you with the primary care you need as your primary care physician. So it doesn't mean that they aren't trying to look for root causes. Every single doctor that isn't a straight allopath family practitioner will say in their advertising and in their intake with you, we address root causes.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's the new hip thing to say.
It's the new hip thing to say. But just because they find a root cause doesn't mean they address the root cause with the treatment that they prescribe.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very, very few of them do. Even in like Eastern Chinese medicine, like if you go to an Ayurvedic practitioner, like I'm sorry, like Paul Check has pointed this out. Paul Check has left jaws dropped to the floor in like Eastern medicine conferences, getting up and giving a keynote speech, making hundreds of people realize at once that are practicing ancient herbal medicine that they are treating symptoms with ancient prescribed medicine instead of figuring out what caused the symptom. Mm-hmm. And then addressing that. So like it's cognitive dissonance. It's like, oh, you came in with a stomach ache. I'm going to give you this herb for the stomach ache. What caused the stomach ache is probably something that you're doing in your life. This herb will fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. Let's rewind here for a second. Why aren't we doing something about the thing you did in your life that caused the stomach ache instead of taking the herb to fix it?
Right.
The herb is a supplementary aid, not the thing to prevent it from happening again.
Mm.
Right.
A great example of this as well is I once had a friend come to me who had been diagnosed with PCOS.
Mm.
And her OBG, you know, made the diagnosis and did review a few lifestyle things, such as, you know, losing weight, exercising, going low carb, etc. But it was literally a 2-minute, here's how you should change your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend came to me and said, I don't even know what low carb is.
Right. So it's all last hormonal problems and autoimmune disorders are literally the prime example mm-hmm. of this happening. It's the last thing. It's a slight suggestion. It's on the back burner, and it's take these supplements, pay me more money, come into my office more often. I'm going to treat you directly more often with inputs that I give you instead of removing things and then adding better things that don't come from me. And it's not that they're trying to. Mm-hmm. It's that that's what they're trained to do.
Right.
Your diagnosis-based practitioner that hands out supplements or prescriptions or does an IV drip or transfusions or gives a biohacking gadget without ever touching how you're living needs to be treated as a secondary consultant that helps you track your progress, and you are the main driver of your getting better. Mm-hmm. And so if they've asked you about your living conditions and they haven't worked with you on lifestyle, then it's time to, quote unquote, fire them and hire yourself. Doesn't mean you have to get rid of them if it's a healthy relationship. Like, I've fired some doctors because it was an unhealthy relationship and they were doing all the wrong things with helping me. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're super in their ego and, like, they're negative in their vocabulary and they're talking about, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, mm-hmm. instead of, like, positive language.
Right.
That's why I've gotten rid of even like the best holistic practitioners that I've had. And then if you have one that is positive, which is wonderful, I've fired positive practitioners who just their treatment wasn't up to snuff. So I've gone both ways. You can keep them on your team, and it's important to have a team. And I talk about that in Training to Win Through Chronic Disease, which was a blog series that we did way back when that's still as relevant today. It's really good.
Right. And this is all not to say that if you're on medications or you're under MD's treatment, do not stop taking your medication. Do not, you know.
Yeah.
That's not what we're getting at here.
But you also, your goal is to stop taking it. If it's, I'm talking in general, there are very, very tiny amounts of cases where medication for life is required. Mm-hmm. But if you go on this journey where you're starting to change things yourself, and in 6 months you have a doctor's appointment from the doctor that prescribed that, tell them what you've been doing, force them to give you a little extra minute of their time because they're going to be rushing, I assume. And explain, I want extra testing to see whether or not I can wean myself off this medication, and then get help from them to stop taking the medication.
Right.
And if they don't help you do that, then that's when you fire them and go get a different doctor like them who will help you wean off the medication. So
right.
Your point is, don't get off the medication on your own.
Yes. So yeah, you should be asking your physician, if they do prescribe something, even vitamins,
yep.
even supplements, ask them, okay, so if I start taking this, what is our end game to get me off of this?
Yep.
What do I need to do to change my lifestyle to help with this disease? And if they tell you there is no end game, which again, for 95% of the things there should be, 5% there might not be. But if they don't have an end game, if they don't have a plan to get you back off this medication and into a healthier state, or if they don't, if they tell you that you don't need to change your lifestyle, mm-hmm. you need to find a new physician.
And, you know, we talked about how people are conditioned from birth in Western society to believe that you can't get well.
Yes.
Well, these are people with all the best intentions in the world to learn how to help people get better, mm-hmm. but they're learning from systems designed by people who also grew up in the same society that believes that people can't get it better. And so even inherent in the training, it's not about getting people well. Like, they might still not know how to the very best of their ability. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to know that, and they're never going to know it themselves. But they might not even know how to live healthfully themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they might not be comfortable giving that advice or even helping you track your progress because they've never had the support in their own lives to know that primary care is lifestyle care, mm-hmm. not supplemental care. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's also important to note that there are a lot of physicians who are very well-meaning. They get into the profession for the right reasons. However, if you read Chris Kressler's Unconventional Medicine, you'll find out that it's really the system that dictates how they're able to treat you. So there are some PCPs out there who know that they need to help their patients with lifestyle, but the way that they are required to work, they're only allowed 10 to 15 minutes with you. It's kind of hard to really get into lifestyle in only 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So it can also be a result of the system that you're in. And so looking for a PCP that is outside that system.
And frankly, like I was talking about practitioners above and beyond just the standard allopath. Like I was talking about all the functional and holistic people.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody, no one person's going to have all the answers. And I'm not saying to fire people because they are missing parts of it. But I'm saying that nobody knows you better than you and nobody has a better plan than you because nobody has been given the plan. Maybe aside from like a Keon coach or like a level 4 Czech practitioner or something like that can help anybody like get healed from anything, you know, like it really is. It's under your own power. The best chiropractors in the world, they didn't get their education from school. We know that personally. We have to go outside and learn from other people who have taken it under their own power to learn and to live their own best life. And without doing that, it's like most – I know we're generalizing here and so we're being a little bit apologetic. I don't want to do that because it's just facts that the medical system is broken. It's like having a scaffold that's set up outside of a building for people to access the higher floors and they're doing external repairs, but the building is still holding itself up.
Right.
You have to hold yourself up. And like it can't be last rant before we move on. Every holistic practitioner I've ever used addressed lifestyle and diet last. General dietitians will address diet first, like dietitians and nutritionists, but they'll give unspecific diets from tests that are designed to look for diagnosis. And then the treatment is from the diagnosis, not from what caused the diagnosis. So it's still not root cause. Diagnosis isn't root cause. They never touch lifestyle, even if they do touch diet, and they don't give intrinsic reason for the diet to work. Or they don't explain or educate why the diet is for you. And so they give a diet and they say, blind faith, follow this. You know, there's no education. And
they don't make sure that you understand what low carb is.
And yeah. And so there's no cultivation of inner knowing. That was an OBGYN. I'm talking about nutritionists. You know, nutritionists will tell you to follow a diet without following your heart. Paul Check teaches people to tune in and ask their bodies and souls whether or not a food is right for them in any given moment, on top of looking at your ancestry and your geology and everything and your seasonality in order to – and the state of well-being in your body in order to determine what types of food will or won't work for you. Mm-hmm. He then is like, don't believe anything I say, first of all. Learn about yourself. And secondly, tune into your own body. Maybe you're on a like keto or carnivore meat-based diet. They're not the same thing. I'm just saying them like an animal-based diet. But it's midsummer and the farmer's market is bumping and you haven't had a salad in like 6 months because your gut's all messed up and you don't handle raw veggies well. And then like you just have this urge and you're like, man, I need vegetables. Like don't ignore that. Don't ignore that. Just like if something says, oh, you have parasites or whatever, or you have fungal dysbiosis, don't eat white rice. You go 2 months without white rice, but you're also like exercising or whatever. And it's like, man, like what? Like, white rice pops into your head and you're like, holy shit, I don't think this is a parasite. I think that I need some carbs. It's all personal. It's changing every moment. And so cultivating that inner knowing is part of being your own primary care physician, but it's also like there's no diet plan without education that will ever work. Like no wonder we're in a dietary epidemic. So in closing, lifestyle's not an add-on treatment. It's not a last-ditch effort, and it's not the end game. It's the starting point to actually feeling better that leads to the end game.
Hmm.
You know, if you've seen if you've felt lousy enough to see a dozen doctors and nothing's worked, then you have to look in the mirror and take responsibility. And part of that taking responsibility is trusting your own word over the guy in the white coat, which is, I know a lot of people say it, but nobody's doing it. If you're not making progress, then you might not be doing it. You have to trust yourself.
Yeah.
First, we talked about trusting yourself over your friends and family. Trusting yourself over an authority figure outside of your social circles is very challenging for some people. I've seen almost 20 doctors now, babe.
And it's, you know, you have to remember
I've had the experience myself.
You have to remember that they are just people.
They're people.
And they're required to know so much information that you cannot remember everything from doctorate school. You can't.
No. And most people don't have the time to learn how to take care of themselves in doctorate school. They go with the motivation not to only be able to take care of other people, but to learn about health for themselves oftentimes. And then they find out that they don't have the time unless they make it a priority, and not many people do. And then they think, I'm going to get into practice, and then I'm going to have the time to take care of myself. But then you get married and you have a baby and you have student loans. You know, there's never a good time.
I think a great little summary of the whole, you know, becoming your own primary care physician is just to become more active, to ask questions and research on your own.
Yep.
Dig in. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And yeah.
Yeah. So really great segue. We're like segueing like Steven Rinella segues. We're breaking the fourth wall all the time on the show. What about living above and beyond your hardship?
Oh, this is my favorite principle, I think. Just living above and beyond your hardship. This principle embraces the fact that your story is so much bigger than whatever you're going through right now. I've, you know, watched Justin here go through this chronic disease that turned both of our lives upside down. You know, we had a plan, we started executing, and it just got all sorts of out of whack.
Destroyed?
You know, like we came in with this.
Quote unquote destroyed.
You know, we moved across the country for him to start a chiropractic program. He got sick. We moved. I started the program while he was also still pursuing it. And then he's not. And I'm becoming a chiropractor. And it's this really long. I mean, I can even go further back into my own personal history.
We can write a book.
We probably will one day.
Mm-hmm.
But the story, looking back, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. There were moments on our own journey that were just heartbreaking. You know, both of us hit very low points, not understanding where we were going. It wasn't where we thought we were supposed to be going. And, you know, the best way through that is to just fully surrender, to take care of yourself. Give yourself self-love, filling your cup, and just surrendering to the outside circumstances that are constantly changing.
Yeah, it's so hard to speak on this without at least giving a teaser for what our part two of philosophy it like touches on a little bit, and that's that like your hardship and all of the perceived terrible things that you've gone through may have saved your life. And to be grateful for the fact that they literally saved your life, because there have been hard times, and there's hard times for everybody that goes through something like that. But the richness in our experience has been absolutely tremendous. And I don't even know. I can't even put words to what a learning and growing experience it has been to be able to fully surrender to where it's taken us. And first of all, I don't see myself as less of a practitioner with less opportunity for it. I am a tremendously powerful facilitator of healing because of having gone through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lack of opportunity for me to lay my hands on people and help them in that way at some point in the future under a different, like, sociological and cultural label, you know. And that isn't even, it was never the main part. So maybe go back and listen to episode 3 again of the podcast, Love. The psycho-spiritual concept of your purpose in life is no vocation. There is no title in Western culture that gives you a label that's aligned with your soul purpose. Your soul purpose is much more esoteric than that. I'm using terms from Bill Plotkin again because it's fresh in my mind, but it really is above and beyond. Like, if your soul purpose is to be a lawyer in life, for example, it's not really, like, your soul purpose is to help others align with themselves and, like, toll out justice for equilibrium in society and in your society and in your community. So something like that. It's always bigger. You know what I mean? And so living above and beyond your hardship is not really, you're not living above and beyond anything. You're living in alignment with your truth, and your suffering is included in your truth.
Yeah.
It's part of the story, you know, and you can't carry it with you. It's not, you can carry the beauty in it, but you can't carry the weight of not being where you wanted to be in any given moment.
Is it a Rumi quote that is the wound is where the light shines through?
I don't know, but I've heard it before. I've heard that one. It's true. That's a beautiful point.
Yeah, that's basically that kind of thinking is what can really get you through the hard times. Just knowing that you're going to be able to use the lessons that you've learned and the hardships that you've gone through to further fulfill your soul purpose.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's a good place to talk about in brief what we're getting into next week. We're going to be talking about how to learn to be thankful for the totality of your experience.
Oh, that is perfect segue.
Yeah. It's about, like, we're going to be talking about reveling in the beauty of your grand design, you know, the power of your full experience, how going through all of this is getting closer to a natural state of being, and what human purpose on this planet is in general, and how healing is moving toward the natural. And we're going to be talking about innate design. So philosophy 202 is really like philosophy 504. You know, we're going to be talking about these ancient Hindu principles from Bhakti Yoga and from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam about Samatvam and Tattva. And Samatvam is this concept that we are all in our experience of equal value. And so it's about the equal importance of all life. Like, the ant crawling across your patio is just as important as you, because it is, in its expression of consciousness, contributing just as much in its role as you are in your role. Just, it can get really deep really fast. I'm going to leave it at that for now. Okay. And then Tattva is true knowing. And it's about the modes of living, being in goodness or passion or darkness or ignorance. And it's about knowledge versus information. And that there are very, very few truths that actually exist in reality. And that information and wisdom are two separate things from that. And so Tattva and being able to see Tattva, or real truth, which is like a true seer, is another term that I don't have off the top of my head. It's another Sanskrit word. It's something Tattva or Tattva something, is like something to achieve through your understanding of what's real and what's an opinion, mm-hmm. you know? And so philosophy too is what we arrive at, the equal importance of all experience and this understanding of what is real or important in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's, you want to talk about late stages of healing. It's heavy. It's going to be really good. And like, I'm really excited about it. And it's going to be an experience.
I'm excited too.
All right. So until next week, if you enjoyed the show, if you are seeing value in what we're doing here, if you want to contribute in any way, you can do so first and foremost by leaving a review on Apple iTunes. We are doing a free 2-week coaching experience for one review per month from now on, and we're going to share our favorite review from iTunes on the show and give that person an opportunity to go through a full Czech practitioner intake with me, which is a tremendous opportunity for someone who is interested in this type of work but doesn't really understand what it entails or isn't really necessarily ready to make the commitment yet. It's a great offering, and it's a fun kind of thing. We're going to be doing a monthly contest to encourage people to leave reviews for the show. And 2 weeks of coaching with me is, like, in a lot of cases, depending on how much work you need, like a full 10-hour coaching package. So it's literally like $1,250 for free just for taking 90 seconds of your time and leaving us a review, leaving us a heartfelt review that gives us fuel to know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what value we are bringing, and what people really love about the show.
Mm.
And that's a fantastic way to give back. We're also on Patreon, $5 a month to jump in our weekly meditations that are recorded also if you can't make the time. That's really powerful. You can go to forgerhealth.com and check out our coaching services as well if you just want to dive on in. And aside from that, just a thank you to all of our consistent listeners so far. This has been a big life changer for us these past like 7 or 8 months now. We can't even believe it's already September. And we're going to keep doing it as long as we can. We really, really love the opportunity and the sense of belonging and community that it's brought. But we want to hear more from you.
Mm.
We want to know who's listening. We want to have people involved. Reach out, send us a message. You know, even if it's just clicking the 5-star rating and letting us know that you're out there and that you care that we're doing this. This is a lot of work. This is a lot of work to do the show, and it really is a project that has to come from the heart or it just wouldn't happen. And so far, we are pouring in a lot more energy than we have gotten out. Not to say that it is a fruitless endeavor. It's just that we would love to know more about our audience, our dedicated listeners, and we know you're out there. And so this isn't one of those asks where it's like I'm talking to the collective but not directly to you. If you're listening to this and you've stuck out this long, I am actually talking to you. I would really like to know who you are and what you love about the show and what you don't. And I'd like for you to join us in making this a more interactive experience. And we can really develop tribe and develop relationships from this. You don't just have to be a passive audience member if you're listening to this. And if that's all you want to be, then that's beautiful as well. I hope that you're gaining value just from listening to that. But there can be more. It doesn't have to be tied to monetary value either. You know, reach out and say hello. We would love to hear from you. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Know that you are never alone. And that you are loved. And until next week, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.